This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 10 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Friday, September the 7th. We set aside this hour every week to talk with two guests from different perspectives about all the political issues in the news any given week. And this week we've got lots to talk about, including a new presidential candidate, an ongoing scandal in Congress, more on Iraq, and whatever else caught your eye. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Today, we are happy to have with us on the right, George Petack, former Republican state lawmaker. He is a principal at White Hirschbeck Dudek Government Affairs. He joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning to your listeners.
And on the left, as we say, Georgia Durislati, professor of political science at Beloit College, author of Creating Gender, the Sexual Politics of Welfare Policy. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, George.
Good morning, Georgia.
There's lots of things to talk about, but let's start with this.
I'm running for president of the United States.
All right.
That's Fred Thompson announcing his intention to join the GOP race for president on Jay Leno's show on Wednesday night, I believe. And then he released a webcast and an ad, and he's on the campaign trail. George Petack, what are your thoughts about that?
Well, I guess I would say no surprise that the senator would announce with a little bit of a Hollywood flair. I think he's going to capitalize and probably be able to capitalize rather easily on some of his notoriety from his acting career. Of course, he will have a voting record to stand on too, and which will be what has been and will be exposed to much public scrutiny. I guess he brings a new certain flair and a new dynamic to the race that actually seems to have lacked some interest and enthusiasm, at least based on what I've seen on the right, compared to what the action and the enthusiasm and everything that's going on the Democrat side with the Obama, Clinton and Edwards race that's going on there. So it's it'll be interesting to see what happens, and I'm anxious to hear more from Senator Thompson and actually the rest of the of a rather full field on the GOP side.
Yeah, Georgia Durislati, does this liven things up a bit?
Well, I think it does liven things up a bit, in part because as one book is entitled, the affect effect, you know, the feeling effect. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can say that I like him from watching TV. Mm-hmm. You know, it has nothing to do with him as a candidate. You know, I like him in this character. And so that certainly is going to contribute to his popularity and the whole confusion in this culture of ours right now over celebrity and substance. You know, he certainly has the celebrity. I think that the whole Republican slate has been kind of flat, and there hasn't been a lot of public enthusiasm for them. And I know that the Republicans were going after one of the morning talk shows because they weren't covering them much. Mm-hmm. But I think that people just haven't been excited about them. So I think he'll bring a little of that excitement. I think George is right that they'll be looking at his voting record, but I actually think what will capture more of the attention is his lobbying record and just what it means to be a lobbyist and the fact that that's what he's done more of his political life than actually be in office.
Yeah, let me play a clip from the GOP candidate debate on Wednesday night that Fred Thompson did not participate in but ran an ad during it. And Rudy Giuliani, the national front runner in the polls, also likes Fred's acting career.
I like Fred a lot. I think Fred is a really, really good man. I think he's done a pretty good job of playing my part on Law and Order. I personally prefer the real thing. But I think Fred will add something to this race.
Right.
I think this is a nomination you have to earn, though. Nobody's going to give it to you. Nobody's going to grant it to you. Nobody is going to crown you. You got to go out there and, like these gentlemen have done, and I've done. You've got to meet people in Iowa and New Hampshire and all over the country. You got to work hard for this. And finally, I think it's going to come down to experience. This is not a time that the United States should be electing someone who's going to get on-the-job training.
Yeah, George Petak, what about that?
Well, it's interesting. Every candidate touts his or her own experience mm-hmm. and credentials, so to speak, for the job, and so it's no surprise that Giuliani would do that. But I think back 20-plus years ago when the Gipper was indicating his interest back in the mid-70s and then 1980 and beyond, I don't think anybody gave Ronald Reagan a chance, even though coming from the governor's position in California, he was seen as an actor and frankly not the best actor, but his persona brought him into the public light and showed a side of a person that really wasn't revealed so much in his acting career. His hand was sort of tipped as the governor of California, but when people saw and heard what he had to say and his confidence in the American people in spite of very difficult circumstances, that's what comes to light, and I think that's what will be revealed with Fred Thompson.
You didn't like Reagan and Hellcats in the Navy? I'm just kidding.
There were many movies that I enjoyed, and some more than others. But I think he so far outshined his acting career as the president of the United States. We may well see that in Fred Thompson, even though Fred Thompson is actually a very fine actor.
Yeah. Well, what about I don't know, Georgia Drislotti? Any comments on what Rudy Giuliani had to say about Thompson?
Well, you know, actually, what I think is funny here is the way in which TV entertainment is being used in the presidential elections mm-hmm. now. And so here is Fred Thompson going on to Jay Leno, you know, nighttime comedy, mm-hmm. and all of the candidates felt compelled to make a joke. And, you know, this is info entertainment, you know, it's the mixing of these two. I do think George is right here about them looking for a Reagan. I mean, you know, this is hardly original on my part to say, but they are looking for this Reagan, and I think, again, goes back to that celebrity persona over substance. And, you know, he really doesn't have that kind of experience. I don't think that the experience Rudy Giuliani has actually qualifies him to be president either, but are we sure what does?
Yeah.
I think that's, if I can just add, mm-hmm. Every candidate, frankly, for every position, whether it's the local town board, school district, or up through the U.S. Senate, the Congress, and the presidency, people bring their history. They bring their background. They bring their credentials. Who's prepared to be president of the United States? I'd venture to say nobody is. But people rise to the occasion. Some rise higher and faster and better than others. But the credentials are one thing. The history, the background, the voting records are important for people to see. But actually, I think the delivery, the personality, the ability to communicate a message—that's what Ronald Reagan had over probably every president before him and after. But the communication skills, I think, are the thing that will differentiate between the top candidates in both the Republican and the Democrats. So.
And I really think that this speaks to something that we should be watching for, and that is we're going to have more actors and those whose job it is to deliver a message. You know, news anchors, we've seen some of that in this state. Because in the television age, that becomes more important. Now, we should ask the question whether this is what we want. Mm-hmm. I think that's a real question, but it's certainly part of what we're seeing.
Sure, and the substance of the not only the ability to communicate, but what he or she is communicating are equally important.
Let me ask both of you, before we move on, from that GOP debate in New Hampshire on Wednesday, do you think... any candidate did himself in the Republicans' case any good? I mean, was this, did anybody stand out in that debate as far as you're concerned, George Petak?
I really don't think anyone did. I think the people that are involved there have their own set of credentials. They have their own history, their own background. They are delivering their messages based on that. Of course, they also take opportunity to criticize the current opponents that they have and others who are getting into the race. So, has anyone stood out? No, and I think. Actually, what's happened is, with certainly, go ahead and criticize the morning talk shows and other media for not covering what they are saying and doing. But frankly, there hasn't been much of newsworthiness there, and so I don't particularly fault the networks or the news the cable stations for. Carrying or not carrying what's happening on the GOP side at this point.
Georgia Gerslotti?
How could I disagree with that?
No, I got an email from Joel in Germantown who says, the highlight of the week for me was Ron Paul's performance in the GOP debate on Wednesday. I think his support will continue to build. His campaign announced on Tuesday the number of volunteers signed up through a website has surpassed 40,000, which far surpasses the other candidates, with Barack Obama a distant second with about 5,800 volunteers.
I have to say, I saw my first presidential yard sign in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin, where I live, my wife and I, and it's for Ron Paul.
So is that right?
And I saw one in Ohio. Yeah, I saw one in Ohio when I took my son to college. And it's Ron Paul. You know, he's a real phenomenon. I mean, he's a real phenomenon.
That, Georgia.
He's a real phenomenon, and I think what he represents is the hunger among Republicans for the old libertarian. You know, let's go back to Barry Goldwater. He was a libertarian, most of all. And that's been so wiped out by social conservatives that I think he's tapping into this hunger that hasn't had a place to go lately. So he's a phenomenon.
Yeah, we
keep
are
in mind, if you will, the hunger on the part of the social conservatives has been at least impacted by the hunger of the social liberals who have made their inroads on the Democrat side. So,
let me remind listeners, this is the Friday Week in Review, talking this week with George Petak and Georgia Gerslotti, and with you too, if you would like to call in with an issue from the news this week. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you along. Hope you stay tuned. It's At Issue with Ben Marins this afternoon between 4 and 6. And as Ben does every Friday after 4 o'clock, he welcomes in a guest to talk with you about the news of the week. It's your views on the news after 4 o'clock. This is The Week in Review with George Petak and Georgia Gerslotti, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm going to let Chris in Milwaukee pick our next subject. Hi, Chris, you're on the air.
Good morning. I just want to say that Monday being Labor Day, I thought it was a real shame and disrespectful to the American workers that George Bush picked that day to go to Iraq.
Why was that disrespectful, Chris?
You know, on Memorial Day, he doesn't go out and do something that doesn't memorialize the soldiers. Mm-hmm. On Christmas, he certainly doesn't go out and do something that doesn't memorialize Christians. So why on Labor Day does he go and try and create other news instead of, I mean, at mm-hmm. least staying out of the news? No, he picked that day to create other news in another part of the world so that people wouldn't think about it, the day as a day of labor.
Well, a couple different issues here. Georgia Gerslotti, let's start with you. Why did the president make his surprise visit to Iraq on Monday, do you think?
Well, let me start with Republicans really support business and not labor, so it's not mm-hmm. as important for them. And I think it was just, you know, timing on his way there. It was possible to do. He needed to get in the news so that he could put a positive message out about Iraq and everything that's happening there. He visited the troops. I mean, you know, I just think that Labor Day isn't important to Republicans in the same way it is to Democrats.
Mm-hmm. George P. Tech?
I think it's very true. The Republicans, I don't know what the caller would expect the president to do. Normally, he's in the business of trying to run the country and to represent the country as well as he can around the world. And so would he and his press people rather have had him at a labor rally in Atlanta or in Chicago or in New York? I doubt it. Because frankly, what news would that have generated other than people bashing him for everything from immigration to health care to the war in Iraq? So what they tried to do, and I think they succeeded to a certain extent, is to have him supporting the troops, showing, and frankly, having them show their support for him as they go through the process of this war effort. So I think it was no surprise to have him far away from the local Democrat strongholds, that being organized labor.
I do think Chris is right, though, in terms of the symbol. And while you know, you and I can explain the partisan orientation here and look at the practicalities of a surprise visit to Iraq, I think Chris is right in that it is a symbol that, you know, labor doesn't have an important place in politics, especially for Democrats, for Republicans.
And labor, frankly, I mean, as we've seen the numbers over the last 15, 20, 30 years, labor doesn't have its the kind of impact it once had, organized labor, in terms of their own interest, the labor fests and the parades and those things that were in their heyday probably in the 40s, 50s, and 60s.
Well,
have been waning, and actually the impact of organized labor among its own has been diminishing regularly.
Global economy, you're right. I mean, you describe accurately, and global economy, it begs a whole bunch of other questions that probably are beyond the scope of what we're going to talk about today.
Well, I think you're right.
Yeah, and we will talk a little bit more about the president's visit to Iraq on Monday. I talked to a guest who said, in part, this was he wanted to head off the news that was going to be in the news that day and this week. This GAO, Government Accountability Office report that has yet another critical look at progress in Iraq that Congress was hearing earlier this week. Iraq has failed to meet 11 of the 18 benchmarks set by Congress earlier this year, according to the GAO. Things aren't going so well in Iraq, George P. Tech?
Well, I have to say the president is out there trying to make his case, trying to make the case of the military and its involvement in its activity there in Iraq. The president is placing a lot of faith and confidence and trust in the military, in General Petraeus, to bring forth his report later this month. And I guess I'm more interested in that than I am in the General Accounting Office in their report. Certainly there are indicators that things are happening in a very positive way in some segments of the effort there, and very negatively in other ways. So we'll see. What I'm anxious to see and hear what the military has to say.
Well, the problem is far less the military than it is the political side of things, and that is what the GA report was focusing on mostly. And I don't think there's doubt in many people's minds that the political side of things is holding up progress. So that's where we really need to focus. You know, Petri certainly has recognized this, and he's coming out with other, and I never would have called Petri a moderate Republican, but I suppose he is now, coming out with other moderate Republicans to take a stand that says we need to rethink what we're doing. And I think listeners know that I have a former student who's a lieutenant colonel in the Marines in Anbar province. And, you know, from what he can judge, they are waiting for us to leave, and then they're going to do their own violence against each other. So it looks calm now, and, you know, I mean, the mere attack, the attacks that are starting to happen there, you know, to show that while, you know, there may have been some progress there, it's not a done deal, blah, blah, blah. You know, you can just see the kind of tactical level of danger. And the part that we have to remember is that those are our troops over there that are just the pawns in this kind of political game.
Yeah, let me, before George Pitek responds to that, let listeners know, in case they hadn't heard, that Petri joined, it says here, 10 colleagues from both parties on Tuesday in signing a letter urging the House to work together to unite behind a bipartisan strategy to stabilize the country and bring our troops home. Petri said he did not believe this was a statement for forcing troop reductions or some sort of timeline specifically, but still. Tom Petri, what do you make of what he did there, George Pitek?
Well, I think Congressman Petri is expressing what is probably the sentiment of his constituents here in Wisconsin, but also a vast majority of people in the country. It's no surprise, and frankly, there's no news there in a sense that I would question who wouldn't want the United States government to aid in stabilizing the government, stabilizing the country, so that eventually our troops can come home. That's a universal goal. I'm praying for that to happen sometime. But I'm also concerned, and maybe between the lines of that particular letter, there is from Congressman Petri and his colleagues a desire to win the effort. Not just to abandon the troops, not just to abandon the Sunnis and the Shiites and those folks to their own means, but to stabilize. You know, that's the operative term as far as I'm concerned. Let's stay there until we make the progress that would result in leaving a stabilized form of government there.
Well, who wouldn't want it? Well, you know, there are lots of members of Congress who wouldn't want it, and the president. I mean, you know, the whole cut and run rhetoric on the one hand and the bring the troops home now rhetoric on the other hand, there are lots of people who don't put the two together. And I see, you know, on the Democratic presidential candidate side, you really only see Joe Biden and Hillary Clinton being sophisticated in their rhetoric about what needs to happen here. So, you know, I think there are a lot of people who don't put this together, and that I think George and I would agree that that's most unfortunate.
Yeah, let me bring in some more callers. Sarah in Waukesha is next. Hi, you're on the air. Sarah, I'm going to have to put you on hold, and I'm going to just ask Sarah's question and not go back to her. She just wondered why she hasn't seen Condi Rice in the news very much these days. She was with the president in Iraq, but has Condi's star fallen, Georgia Gerislotti?
Well, there was actually a splash last week in the New York Times about her waning star, and a wonderful paper at the political science convention I was just at on this very thing, that she's so close to the president that in many regards she's tied to the president's fortunes. And so indeed, as his star wanes and as he comes to the end of his term, so does hers. And so you're not seeing her in part because she's less prominent in what she can influence now. On the other hand, she's around and she's active and she's doing things. So if you're reading closely, you can see, you know, that she was there in Iraq with the president. You know, she's over in doing things in Asia right now. You know, so that she's around. She's just not as newsworthy as she might be and being deployed that way.
Mm-hmm. George Pitek?
I agree totally. In the closing months of the current presidency, or frankly any presidency, those people who have been strongest supporters and in many cases most visible supporters and message carriers for an administration start to back off because, number one, their term is coming to a close, and number two, there is life after the presidency and life after the serving as a Secretary of State, and my guess is that while Condoleezza Rice may not be in the presidential arena for the 2008 election, that she will not shrink from visibility totally by any means. She's a bright, articulate, very, very capable Secretary of State, and will play a role, I think, in the political arena in the United States for years to come.
Let's talk now if Senator Larry Craig of Idaho will shrink from visibility or not. Larry Craig still in the news this week. On Saturday, he announced his intention to resign from his Senate seat by September 30th. But then we heard this voicemail he left on a wrong number.
Billy, this is Larry Craig calling. You can reach me on my cell. Arlen Specter is now willing to come out in my defense, arguing that it appears by all that he knows I've been railroaded and all of that. Having all of that, we've reshaped my statement a little bit to say it is my intent to resign on September 30.
So will he resign on September 30, George Petek?
You know, the political winds have a way of changing one's intentions and one's rhetoric and one's public statements. I don't know if he will or not, but I would say that here on Friday, September 7th, the pressure is on Larry Craig to explain who he is, what he is up to, and I think the pressure, while it might not be so much on the public side, his colleagues are very, very concerned. Unfortunately, not so much about Larry Craig as a person, but about the party itself, how it will fare based on revelations about Mr. Craig and the situation in Minnesota. So it's very difficult to say, but I would say that the pressure is there. It's mounting, and while he may have a supporter or a few in the U.S. Senate, my guess is they are very, very concerned with what's going to happen in the future and will strongly encourage him to consider their fate much more than he considers his own, frankly.
What's your guess, Georgia Derslati?
Oh, the Republicans want him out of there yesterday. I mean, the hypocrisy of an anti-gay, you know, he's done everything in his power to deny gay rights and, you know, to have this social conservative out there, you know, bearing the Republican name, the Republicans want him out of there.
Yeah.
Will he go? I have no clue. That, I mean, that's a personal decision he's going to have to make. But I like Georgia, I believe that the pressure is probably being exerted as much as possible.
Yeah,
well, it's a safe Republican seat. That's not the problem. You know,
right.
It's how much he damages the party in the process.
Yeah. Well, and it's the party, and it is the message. Clearly, this is an issue that the Republicans would like to put beside or away and move on and talk about the people who will represent their points of view, their political philosophies, their social conservative philosophies, and do it better than someone who's got a taint of hypocrisy there.
To bring everybody completely up to date, his aide, Craig's aide, did say yesterday that for all intents and purposes, Craig was going to be stepping down on September 30th. The only little window of opportunity or wiggle room that was left was if he could overturn this guilty conviction when he pleaded guilty to the lesser charge of disorderly conduct for this conduct in a men's bathroom in Minneapolis, that if he could do that and clear his name and all that, that maybe then he would stay. But it looked like he was going to step down by September 30th because there's no way he could do it that quickly. But why, Georgia Derslati, was the GOP so hard on Craig to step down, forcing him to step down, and nary a peep when it came to Republican Congressman Vitter from Louisiana when Vitter was accused of being involved with an escort service and doing things that aren't exactly family value related?
Well, you know, they really are homophobic. Mm-hmm. You know, this is this is front and center of a whole political belief, but also of a strategy in the last election cycle of running the anti-gay amendments around the country, no gay marriage. This is really deeply held. And yes, you know, the other, not family values, but it's a little less dicey in the public mind than especially the part of their constituency that mobilized around no gay marriage, that was not entirely, but a good chunk of that was a new part of their constituency, that this is really important to them.
Yeah. George Pitek?
Well, I think there's a break between the two sides, in a sense that Georgia talks about the anti-gay rhetoric and the anti-gay focus. I look at it as a conservative Republican, if I may. I look at it as much more a pro-family, pro-traditional American family, or pro-traditional family approach, as opposed to anything that would be considered anti-gay. Now, that's the way I view it, and that's the way I believe the state of Wisconsin has viewed it when it passed the pro-family a definition of marriage act in the constitutional amendment just last November. So there's a very, very strong message that's being sent nationally, actually, across the political spectrum, that says the Americans support traditional family.
So then answer Joy's question, you know, why didn't the Republicans react when somebody was not being very pro-family?
Well, I think the Republicans have chosen, and I'm not in that circle of decision makers, but Republicans have chosen to take a stand on Larry Craig and his activities, or his alleged activities, and not the Vitter activities, because there are different circumstances there. There are different ways to look at the way they handle these things, and frankly, I don't have input into into that decision making process. But I would expect that the political arena in Senator Craig's area, the political arena in Mr. Vitter's area, are different, right. and they've chosen to handle them differently.
We have a break, and then more with our two Week in Reviewers. It's our Friday Week in Review, talking with George Pitek, a former Republican state lawmaker, and Georgia Durst Lottie, a professor of political science at Beloit College. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Or talk at WPR.org if you would like to participate in this week's Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.
His voice was known world round, but it was Italy that Luciano Pavarotti called home, and it was there that the opera megastar lost a long, tough battle with pancreatic cancer Thursday.
Kathleen Dunn and her guest, who happens to be Laurie Skelton, Wisconsin Public Radio classical music host, will talk about Pavarotti's music, his life, and his death this week, coming up after 10 o'clock. The voice that moved the world after 10. This is the Friday Week in Review, talking with George Pitek and Georgia Durst Lottie about mainly the political news in this week. But either one of you a big Pavarotti fan?
No, but I think he was a true ambassador for the arts, and one could not help but enjoy that voice.
Yeah, what a beautiful
Absolutely.
Voice. Yeah,
my sentiments exactly.
Yeah. We're going to hear the voice of a totally different subject here, but we haven't talked yet about Osama bin Laden. Apparently will be issuing another video message for us to commemorate the anniversary of 9/11. The White House says any new video message from Osama bin Laden would only underscore the threat that the United States and other nations face from extremists. Al-Qaeda's media arm says that bin Laden will issue the video in the coming days ahead of the sixth anniversary of 9/11. The AP story here says bin Laden's appearance would be significant. The al-Qaeda leader has not appeared in a new video footage since October of 2004, and he has not put out a new audio tape in more than a year. Apparently, the photo that we have of him now, he has a dark black beard rather than a graying beard. Your thoughts on this new video message, Georgia Derslati?
Well, a couple different things. One, you know, just the way the White House deals with it, and certainly some would claim it's their message to scare. On the other hand, we have reason to be vigilant. We can thank the Europeans, the Danes, and the Germans for thwarting an effort over there. I mean, we really are in a never-ending, it seems, and I think maybe some end to it, but war on the war on terror is real, and it's here. The other thought that I had about this is the irony and catch-22 that we're in. You know, bin Laden couldn't be effective if the media didn't cover this stuff, and yet the media has to cover this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so, the very tools and tactics of terrorism involve the same things that we need in a democratic society. So, you know, we're really stuck on this one. I do hope experts, look hard at this and tell us whether it's real, because, you know, how do we know on a video?
Mm-hmm. George Pitek?
Well, I agree. This is a global situation. We have seen the terrorists attack and be caught prior to attacks in Spain, in Italy, in France, in the United Kingdom, in Germany, and with the Danes and the Germans here thwarting another obvious plot. I am thankful that the overwhelming majority, it seems, of the world community, the nations of the world, understand the problem that terrorism presents to their rank and file populations, and so the intelligence network that is currently working around the world, coordinated in many of their efforts through CIA efforts. These things are being found. Are they all being found? Who knows? Have they been found as they are focusing their attention on freedom-loving people like those in Great Britain or those in Spain or those in the United States? We have thwarted those efforts so far in the last 6 years. Hopefully we'll continue to do that. But will they stop from occurring? Absolutely not. And whether or not this tape is legitimate, I guess that raises a question. But at the same time, if bin Laden is not at the helm, will terrorism go away? Not a chance. And so the problem and the threat to U.S. soil and U.S. citizens is real, as it is in Peru or in Madagascar. You know, they will take advantage of whatever opportunity they can to inflict terror on freedom-loving people.
We'll talk more about this when we know what he has to say and what the experts have to say about that tape. Let me move on to some state issues. Only 10 more minutes to go, and some issues going on in the state of Wisconsin that we should discuss. The State Judicial Commission this week recommended a formal reprimand for Supreme Court Justice Annette Ziegler on allegations she violated ethics rules by failing to disclose conflicts of interest while she was a judge in Washington County. In a complaint filed with the Supreme Court, the Judicial Commission found that Ziegler, as a circuit court judge, failed to disclose her potential conflict of interest to the parties in 11 cases involving the West Bend Savings Bank, where her husband served as a paid member of the board of directors. And Jerry in Madison wants to talk about this story. Hi, Jerry. You're on the air.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning to your guests. Yes, I think the Judicial Commission dropped the ball on this. A reprimand doesn't get it. I think Annette Ziegler should face a recall campaign and a recall election, and then maybe the facts will come out.
All right, Jerry, is this as a reprimand good enough, Georgia Derslati?
Oh, I think Annette Ziegler showed bad judgment, which is not exactly what you want in a judge. She won, and the question is, now what? And I would just remind everyone that she did not come to her realization that she had done something wrong easily. She resisted that for a very long time, and that resistance actually lowered her, in my estimation, more than having made the mistake in the first place.
Yeah, let me clarify that the full Supreme Court, without Annette Ziegler on it, must now review the complaint and decide whether the reprimand or a more serious penalty would be appropriate. George Petak?
Well, I believe Justice Ziegler is the first Supreme Court justice to be reprimanded. And in a very real sense, that is a serious handling, I think, of her situation. The circumstances surrounding her decision making, I think, are fairly clear. They're public record. Did she make some mistakes? I would say she probably did. She has admitted that there were errors in judgment. At the same time, I question who of our elected officials haven't made errors in judgment. The jury suggests a recall election. I've had a little experience with that, and I would say that that goes so far beyond anything that would be appropriate in this particular case. There's no call for a recall. But if Jerry's interested, go for it. Start the petition drive and see where it takes you.
In the No News is Still News department, the conference committee that's working on the state budget held its 10th meeting this week on Wednesday, only to adjourn with no progress to report. That means Wisconsin is now 68 days overdue in putting a new two-year budget in place. Will we ever have a budget, George Petak?
You know, that's a legitimate question. I think there's some real sentiment here that says that the two sides are so far apart on virtually every remaining issue, whether it's environment to corrections to education to health care. There may not be an agreement here. The governor has, has strongly encouraged more recently than in the past, has strongly encouraged the two sides to get together and do the job that they're elected to do. That's coming from the governor. Until the elected officials themselves, the leaders of both houses, those conference committee members, and until they hear from their own constituents how detrimental this is to them or how their pocketbooks are paying. I don't know that there will be much progress there. The closer we get to the October time frame, the more impact this will have on property taxpayers, and so that that drumbeat is starting to be heard. But there may be an effort to pass a segment of the budget that has most to do with property taxes, and I know there's some efforts out there from Senator Ellis and Representative Coffert to go in that direction. Will that happen? I doubt it. But it's certainly an interesting scenario we see because of the total differences of opinion from the elected officials on both sides of the aisle.
Well, what is your take, Georgia Gerslati?
Well, I've been saying for a while that it looks like a complete stalemate right now, and because we will continue on with the prior budget. The incentive to actually get something done is less than it should be. I fear, much like with Georgia Thompson case, that the whole climate has become one of winning and scoring points for your side rather than governing, and it's enormously irresponsible that they can't seem to get past this impasse. I do not think that they should pass part of the budget regardless of what they're doing. And I cannot understand why the Republican position is so strong on undermining the very infrastructure of the state. And I can only speak from the political science department at the UW, but they cannot compete anymore for the best faculty. Do we really want to undermine our primary infrastructure in the state, and by not passing budgets on all of these important services and structures that for the state, we're just turning into Arkansas. You know, why don't we look at Minnesota? They're doing something right over there.
Let me get a
I think what we'll ultimately see, though, is that until the leaders on both sides have that kind of input, Georgia, from their constituents, they believe that they are representing the interests of the people who elected them and the people who they represent. And on the conservative side, they are opposed to tax increases. On the liberal side, they're not. They're interested in moving forward with certain programs that would result in or that would require increases in taxes. And there's the rub. Some have pledged never to vote for a budget with a tax increase. Some have pledged, and many have not taken that pledge, but that's where the problem is, and that frankly might not be answered until November of 2008.
Yikes. Let me get Carl and Pesh to go on. We're almost out of time, Carl. I'll go ahead.
Yeah, what's the state stance on funding public radio as regard to our federal government? Congress voted overwhelming to fund national public radio.
Well, the assembly version of the state budget takes away state taxpayer dollars for public radio and television. The Democratic Senate's budget does not. That's one of the areas of conflict, right, George P. Tech?
It is one of several, and one of the may I say the minor ones. I mean, in the overall scheme of things, but it is indicative of the kind of a breakdown that's there. Some say public radio should be sponsored and supported by other means other than the taxpayer money. In viewing it as a priority versus the other needs of state government.
Yeah.
So that will be resolved, I'm sure.
Right.
If there's a budget, that will be resolved in it.
I'm happy to hear it might be resolved. George Gerslotti, did you have any thoughts on that? Very quickly, we're almost out of time.
I think George has described what's happening quite well. The one point I would make in addition is that we need good media for a democracy, and public radio is the single place. Public radio and television is the single best place to get it now because of commercial pressures.
That's a good place, I think, for us to leave it. I did want to ask you both very quickly, though. Do you think Congressman Jim Sensenbrenner should be told he has to stop buying lottery tickets? He won again. Did you see that in the news?
No, he can buy lottery tickets as long as it's legal.
$1,000 from the
Wisconsin. Yeah. Let him buy away. Yeah. Free country.
He is a lucky guy. All right. Well, thanks very much to both of you for being with us.
Thank you very much.
George Petek and Georgia Derslotti. Thanks to Leo Duran and Karen Prager for producing this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.